Maybe I'll just start by saying thank you for being for inviting me to this panel. And I wish I had heard all these fantastic presentations first, because I would have done my organized my talk a little bit differently. But I'll blow through this and see how far along I get before I too get the big hook. But just to say, what is so exciting about all the conversations we've had is that I think there's really a common theme, and it is, How do we realize our strength in numbers? How do we maximize our bargaining power? How do we actually build engagement with workers? And I feel as though we're really onto something, and it's very exciting, and I do agree with everyone that this is key to union renewal. So let me just quickly start with the Fight for 15. People probably have heard about it in the United States, but it is a movement that's been growing in the United States since 2012, when a handful of fast food workers in New York City decided to give their employers a two-finger salute and walk off the job. And these were workers without even a union to back them at the time. And I think that had the effect of electrifying the labor movement across North America, because here were the most vulnerable workers you could ever imagine, who didn't have the right to strike, who didn't have the protection of the union, and they decided they're going to exercise their right to strike, because the right to strike is not a privilege granted by legislation. It's a right that we all have so long as we have the confidence to use it. And that, I think, was electrifying. But it wasn't just audacious tactics that really electrified the American movement. It was also those audacious tactics combined with a victory in a little suburb called SeaTac, just outside of Seattle. It was home to the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. And as the previous speakers have talked about, the reason that came about is that those airport jobs that used to be excellent, decent, not highfalutin, but very good middle-class jobs, were basically decimated through contract flipping, contracting out, and so forth. So not only were those jobs themselves degenerating in terms of wages and working conditions, but actually the numeric strength of those unions were fundamentally at risk. And those unions were realizing more and more that they didn't have the numeric strength to leverage with their own employers. So first they got together union workers at the airport, and then they realized they needed to expand it and involve non-union workers in this process to start leveraging the strength of a working class movement that can begin to push back against the employer agenda. And in that context, they realized that it's very hard to sustain your own contract and employment provisions if the ground underneath your feet is collapsing. So they decided they needed a concrete strategy to raise the floor of wages and working conditions in that municipality. And in the US, unlike Canada, some municipalities have the provision for passing employment law that is applied not just to the directly hired workers of the municipality, but to everybody in the jurisdiction, all employers in the jurisdiction. Of course, we don't have that in Canada. Labor law is primarily the domination of primarily the dominion of the provinces, with a small sliver at the federal level. But where they were able to exercise that power, they did. So they basically went door knocking, and they said, we want to put on a ballot a law that not only brings in a $15 minimum wage, but we want to bring in a modicum of paid sick days for the first time ever. And this is in a country, by the way, that is unique in the developed world for not even giving people paid maternity leave. So just to let you know, that's how backward it is. So paid sick days, a modest number of paid sick days, fair scheduling, schedules in advance, and the question of involuntary part-time, where before an employer can hire a new person in, they have to offer that work to existing employees. So those were all very radical proposals. They basically won it in a referendum by getting enough signatures, having those arguments, winning people's confidence, and then getting it on the ballot, and then winning the referendum ballot. And that project was so electrifying that right next door in Seattle, where the city council elections were happening, it just so happened that a woman decided to model that strategy, put it at the heart of her campaign, Kishan Sawan, and made the Fight for 15 the central platform of her electoral strategy. And the effect of that was to create a narrative within which all of the contenders for that election were out trying to outdo themselves in supporting a $15 minimum wage and better working conditions and so forth. So I would say those two things together were the things that were so electric. And April 15th in Ontario, when we relaunched the minimum wage campaign to be the Fight for 15 in Fairness, we joined with the American Day of Action that had 230 cities in the US and 15 Ontario cities. There's a few images here of how fabulous they were. Here we go again. And then a year later, there was more cities in the US involved. There were 20 Ontario actions across the province. But this time, the struggle really had become pan-Canadian, with 12 cities from BC to Quebec to Nova Scotia involved in the campaign. So that's fantastic. People have talked about the impact of the minimum wage campaign that we had in Canada, or in Ontario. I'll just run quickly through it. It was $11 an hour. It was bumped to 75 cents. We did win annual indexation, and that really matters because actually many collective agreements that used to have COLA clauses, those were given up in the 1990s in a period of low levels of inflation. So the majority of union contracts don't have indexation, automatic indexation now. So this, it was a huge gain to win this in law and so forth. And then there were a few other modest changes, but the most important thing was the forcing the government to review the labor laws, because everyone knows that talking about the minimum wage is really shorthand for talking about bad jobs. And as others were saying, you can't talk about a decent wage, hourly wage, if you're only getting 4 hours a week. So all of this is part and parcel of the same kit and caboodle. The accomplishments of this movement in the U.S. are amazing. 19 million U.S. workers will benefit from raises sparked by the Fight for 15. It is phenomenal. It will put almost $62 billion of money into the pockets of workers, and of course that is going to help the American economy. And it's also why the data from last year shows that for the first time in decades, the fastest growing wage bracket in the American labor force are those at the bottom of the income pile, not the top. And that is a direct result of actually fighting to raise the wage floor. So that's absolutely fantastic. But again, it has never been just about the minimum wage. There's been a whole move to win paid sick days as part of the Fight for 15. There's been a whole movement around scheduling victories and so forth in San Francisco. There's now a retail workers' bill of rights that is putting the issue of decent hours and fair scheduling and the whole kit and caboodle on the table. So these movements are really beginning to win and being able to inspire people. So much so that it's really seen that the fair scheduling is the next frontier, according to some newspaper articles. So partly in terms of the Ontario campaign, trying to keep the momentum from the minimum wage campaign, and then also to link very deliberately with the successes of the American movement, because as people have mentioned, what people feel like they can fight for, what is a realistic goal, is completely subjective. You know, if you're feeling isolated and beaten down, you don't really think much of anything is possible. But when you get your solidarity on, you start feeling like a heck of a lot more things are possible. And that's why it was a very deliberate strategy to connect with this growing movement. So we relaunched under the Fight for 15 and Fairness specifically to target the Changing Workplaces Review and to put all these same issues that unions are fighting for in their contracts to make it a matter of law. So decent hours, curbing involuntary part-time notice, proper vacation, the whole shebang. And definitely regulating temp agencies, I'm sure it needs no description about how appalling those situations are. Paid sick days. I have to say, when I started this campaign, I was under the illusion that every single collective agreement would have paid sick days, but I was shocked to find that not even all union contracts have paid sick days. And of course, we also know there are huge attacks on public sector workers and union contracts that do have paid sick days. So making a campaign about giving paid sick days for everyone really is about changing the conversation on that front as well. And of course, to extend unpaid emergency leave to all workplaces, because right now, if you're in a workplace with less than 50 employees, you can't even expect job security if you have to take a day off to take your kid to the hospital. That's how bad the situation is. And of course, the right to unionize and organize, because we can have all the great laws in the world, but if we are suffering reprisals and constructive dismissals because we're organizing a union or because we're trying to speak up for our rights in the workplace, we're not going to get very far ahead. And so that's incredibly important. And also the way that employers can fool around with the whole question of scheduling, because one great way to get rid of somebody that they know is juggling two or three jobs is to just make sure that their schedules happen to be at the same time as their other job. So these are all things that we have to do to improve workers' ability and agency to affect change in the workplace. And harassment, integrating racism, sexism, Islamophobia, the resistance in the workplaces to those very important issues, and special protections for migrant workers. If I have time, I want to come back to that question, because they're in a particularly precarious situation based on the rules and so forth. And then finally, of course, proactive enforcement. These are all fundamental aspects of the fairness campaign, which many unions are already fighting for in their collective agreements. And finally, the question of the $15 minimum wage, although it is technically out of scope of the Change of Workplaces Review, we do have the capacity to demand an end to the sub-minimum wages experienced by certain sectors of workers, whether it's students under the age of 18 or liquor servers, or farm workers and so forth, and ending the exemptions that leave almost 25% of the labor force without the full protection of the Employment Standards Act. So why does this matter? It matters because, as I said before, if the ground is crumbling, it's very hard for unions to set the bar. And unions, therefore, have to work harder and harder and harder just to protect the conditions that do exist in their contracts and maybe enforce some of the minimum standards. But if we actually had a much more stable floor for wages and working conditions, it would be much easier for unions to be able to raise the bar. But we can't raise the bar without also pulling up the floor, and I think that's a question that I'll come back to later. One other thing about the situation in Canada that's worth mentioning is that we now know $15 an hour. At first, when we were first calling for $14 an hour, people thought we were dreaming in Technicolor. But now it's, we can say, as a result of this campaign, two-thirds of Canadians think that $15 is the right way to go. That really matters. And it matters because right now, about 25% of the workforce earns less than $15 an hour. It matters because women and racialized workers are overrepresented in these low-wage jobs. And it matters because actually almost 10% of unionized workers earn less than $15 an hour. And it's not just like one in every 10, it's actually concentrated in particular sectors, which is not the fault of the unions involved, but a reflection of some sectors that are very difficult to organize, that have lower union density and so forth, and there are very material and real challenges to those sectors. So the question is, if we know that there's this much public support, how can we actually begin to develop a concerted union strategy to say no way to anyone ever earning less than $15 an hour? And the beauty of this frame is that when we deliberately frame it as part of the fight for 15 and fairness, when unions win these things, non-union workers don't see it as some other perk for those fat cat union members that they're never going to see in their life. They will understand it as a down payment on their own turn, which is coming up next. And it's actually a way of building solidarity between union and non-union workers and leveraging the strength of the labor movement. So how do we begin to do this? Because, of course, everyone has said the sentiment for decent work is there, but then how do we actually translate this into real action and real organization? And, you know, certainly in our campaign, we're trying to be very strategic about these things, trying to identify pockets of activists that we can and people and sectors that we can begin to activate. So health providers, faith community folks, people on the post-secondary campuses, to how do we begin to knit together these alliances. And it's not easy. We're mostly starting from scratch on this front. But here's a few images of work that we've done with health providers. Their focus is around paid sick days. And so we got health providers across the province to sign a petition, did a news conference and so forth. But also faith leaders. How can we begin to knit together people in the faith community? Because our union members and our workers are not just workers, they're also, you know, engaged in other communities. So we've been doing work around that and, again, trying to build up these networks. But also on the question of sectors, I talked a bit about SeaTac. There's an experiment happening at Pearson International Airport where there is an airport workers council that is involving non-union workers in this project. It's absolutely fantastic. We've heard about the incredible gains of the grocery store workers, and I just can't salute UFCW and Unifor enough for creating conditions in which there's a material incentive for union and non-union workers to support each other, so that fighting to raise the minimum wage is not merely charity for those poor non-union workers that are all victims of the system, but actually that we all have skin in the game and that this is a mutual interest, and it strengthens our campaign when we do that. Food service workers, Stephanie talked about, absolutely fantastic possibilities are ahead of us, because as unions begin to deliberately link their collective bargaining strategies to the fight for 15 and fairness, it makes it much easier to build the kind of solidarity necessary to win significant gains. And that has posed a question certainly on the campuses, but we can begin to pose it across the province. Where can we start identifying those poverty wage jobs in all of our workplaces, among the casual units, among the part-time workers, and how do we begin to make sure that they're brought up to at least $15 an hour as part of our both our political campaign with the provincial government, but also with our collective bargaining strategies? And again, a few images. These are images of students and workers supporting the Unite Here Local 75 workers at York. What have we accomplished here? We've got more and more parties have the confidence to support the campaign. It's fantastic. We've also heard that in Ontario, the Liberal government is now thinking that it might actually make $15 an hour a part of its provincial election platform. And I'll tell you something, that's a victory in and of itself, even if there's just rumors of it. We'll see what happens. We've got an actual path to 15 in Alberta, and they haven't backed off on that, so that helps us make $15 an hour very real. We have the fact that the adjustment of Ontario's minimum wage, and it is an adjustment, by the way, not an increase, it's to hold some of its original $11 value, so let's not be confused that it's in fact an increase, and of course we know it's still 17% below the poverty line, and of course now there really is a variation of the fight for 15 plus, 15 plus union rights, 15 plus paid sick days, and almost every province across Canada. And these are just some images of the Unite Here workers. They were able to get full benefit coverage for their part-time members. Like, in addition to getting all of their members up to $15 within the first year of the contract, plus more over the life of the contract, by the end of the contract, every single part-time member will have access to full benefits, including 100% dental coverage. So it's really a phenomenal breakthrough contract that I don't think would have been possible without the solidarity that was brought to bear on that. But the sad thing is that there's still a risk. Because if the York University breaks its contract with Aramark, those workers could be out of their union, out of their wages, and out of a job. So that's why it comes back to the question of how do we build energy around the changing workplaces review, and I'll tell you something, the clock is ticking on that front too. So we've got a little window. Basically, our window is going to be May, the month of May, and next semester, September 11th to December 14th. And we have to do, I would argue, it has to be the absolute priority of everyone to be fighting to make sure that the government is more afraid of us than they are of the corporations who are opposing improving labor laws, because the employers are scared to death of the momentum that these movements have created, and they're working very hard to undermine the demands for better labor laws. And so we need every oar in the water on this front. We can absolutely do it. These are just some images of how we're making the links. We're fighting racism, we're fighting Islamophobia, we're connecting up with women's issues and so forth. People are putting pressure on their MDPs. It's absolutely magnificent. We can win 15 in fairness in 2017. In the US last year, 2016, they billed it the year of the minimum wage. I think this year could be, in Ontario, the year of 15 in fairness, and we can win it through collective bargaining, but we can also win it by getting the laws changed. And in my mind, if we can capitalize on this energy and inspiration, if we can maximize our leverage through building solidarity and inclusion, it seems to me that we are very well situated to make it happen. And I'll leave it at that.